Well, hi, folks. This is Jack Spierko with another edition of the Survival Podcast. As always, one man's view of the changing world, the changing times, and the things we can all do to live a better life. If times get tough, or even if they don't. Today is Thursday, September the 11th, 2025. Yes, I will acknowledge it's been 24 years since the most famous September 11th of all time. I won't be talking about that much today for a variety of reasons. One, because we have bigger issues to discuss today. And also because at this point we've done this for 24 years. And I know if you lost somebody that day or whatever, it will always be yesterday to you. And I respect that and I understand that. But I have other things to cover today, because today we're going to talk about living a better life if times get tougher, even if they don't. And we're going to talk about times getting tougher. Right out of the gate, my segment today is going to be on the Charlie Kirk shooting. It is not going to be a fundamental analysis of all the conspiracy bullshit coming out of it. And it was a professional hit. It had to be. And it was over 200 yards. It was 140 yards, if you can use a map and map tools, by the way. I'll say a little bit about the kind of like let's chill out on what we think we know until we actually know something. But it doesn't matter how this happened. Bad things are coming because of it. And my video segment today, I'm aiming for it to be between 15 and 20 minutes. It may go as much as 25. I will hard limit myself there, no matter how carried away I get. But my concern is for you guys, and for what is coming, and for some really bad fallout. Things that I don't think anybody's really understanding, or anybody's really talking about right now. And I want to kind of put out a warning, and I'm going to say something that I said a lot 5 years ago. Get out! Get out, get out, get out! And I mean it differently this time. And I'm even when I do that segment, I'm going to recount what I was saying in 2020 when I said to get out, what people twisted it into, and how true what I said then became. Am I guaranteeing you what I'm going to say today is going to happen? No. In fact, I'm putting the percentage of odds on what I'm saying is likely to happen at 75 to 80%. That's a 20 to 25% chance it won't happen this way. But you need to listen, and you need to act accordingly, and you need to think differently today than you did a week ago, because the world indeed changed, and this segment was happening today anyway. This segment was happening whether Charlie Kirk got shot or not, because of what happened to the young Ukrainian refugee on a train and how the media handled that. We were already at a surface tension ready to explode into a boil before this happened. All this did was put gas on a smoldering fire and turn it into a blaze. This is bad. This might be one you want to share with your friends. That's why I'm making it also a cutout standalone video that will be in a live stream today. Now, what do we got for the rest of the show? Well, I've got some updates on the AI course for those of you that got in. And some updates and a reminder about the fall workshop that goes on sale Sunday morning, because we are going on with our lives here. Chris Rossini and Dr. Paul will talk about the road Trump promised versus the road he's taking. I'm sure they had lots to say on Charlie Kirk, but the segment was already done for the week when that happened. Nicole Sauce will talk about everyday resilience, what to do when things get hard. You're going to need that advice, and there's a series coming from her in this vein over the next few weeks. Joel Riles will talk about bringing a brand new puppy home and teaching it obedience for the average person. You know, when you run a dog training school and business like Joel does, and you have all these dogs that are well-trained already, and you have puppies coming up together, it's actually in some ways a lot easier to train puppies, because you have kind of that example, and you have a group mindset, and you have professionals all over. What about the person who just gets a dog, brings it home? He's going to talk to you about it from that angle, which I think is very valuable. Mike Melito will talk about thoughts on self-directed, affordable Western hunting, and there is quite a bit of it still available that can be done without a guide and can be done really affordably. And it's something I'm probably not going to do this year, but I'm really thinking about doing something next year, probably in the realm of the pronghorn and maybe picking up a mule deer with it if possible. But I didn't listen to this segment yet, but I'm going to bet you pronghorn come into this, because it'd be one of the most approachable and affordable things that you could do hunting out west. We'll see when we listen together. Andy McCann will talk about the simple basics of how to lose weight. Now, he's just going to say go carnivore. No, he's not. He's going to go through different methods. There are different ways to lose weight, and each of them has upsides and downsides. So I think this will be good. There's plenty of people out there that could shed a pound or three or four or more. And then I'm going to talk again about the dangers of the fallout from the Charlie Kirk shooting. Again, this will be in a video segment that you can share with your friends if you want to break something out alone, taking a different view. Now, I am going to say a little bit about the conspiracy theory shit already started. And my statement is going to be more, not to the effect of, no, that didn't happen, more to the effect of, how about everybody shut up until we actually know something before we start claiming we know things that we don't know? And how about everybody stop claiming to be a ballistics expert and stating things as though they're fact that are demonstrably bullshit? Because there's a lot of that. So we got a lot to cover today. Let's start off with some updates about the AI course if you got in. If you got in the AI course, this is what I need you to know. You should be getting emails, and if you aren't, you need to reach out to me or Tom every day since you signed up with all the things you need to be ready on Monday when we drop. The private Telegram group, what version of GPT to get and all, but this is the one question I've got a bunch of. There's like all these paid versions of GPT. Which one should I get? The cheapest one is fine, right? The $20 a month one is fine. That's it. That's the whole answer. You could do it with the free version, but you should have gotten in your follow-up email series, you would be better off with the pay version for some of the functionality and data limits and memory limits and things like that, right? But you should be getting an email a day that tells you exactly what to do and how to be ready. If you're not getting that, please reach out to us. And I would tell you, for technical things, you're better off reaching out to Tom than me, because I'm just going to forward it to Tom if it's a technical issue. All right, next up, the fall workshop. Just a reminder, it goes on sale on Saturday morning, and that time, again, is 9 a.m. This is the important part, Central Daylight Time. If you're in California, you need to adjust. If you're in New York, you need to adjust. I have to state a time. I live in the central time zone, so it's the time zone that I state. If you forget to convert it, and you're up late, and you don't get in, I'm sorry. You know, I can't fix it for you. It's the same rules we've always had. The cost, $600, $200 as a deposit due at sign up, $400 due when you arrive. This year we're doing it again at a YMCA camp about 15 minutes from my home. It is going to absolutely be an upgrade in venue. There are a few new rules because I can't make the rules at a venue, including some things like no guns. YMCA is not any gun. They literally have a rifle range there. But it has to be 22s. It has to be supervised. It has to be prearranged, etc. It's an insurance issue. Dogs, service dogs only. That's actually more freedom than I've given at my place. And some other things. Everything you could possibly want to know is in a post at thesurvivalpodcast.com. The title of that post is TSP 25 Workshop Updates, Schedule, and Important Details. There'll be a link in today's show notes as well. But this is kind of your last whoop reminder, right? Like, this thing sells out. That is not marketing hype. We have sold out every year we've done it. I think there was one workshop in almost 30 total done that we didn't fully sell out on. And that was like a short-term planned midwinter one with Stephen Harris in February. Every one we've done like this is sold out. In the last five years of doing these workshops, we have never gone more than 6 minutes without selling out. We may go 10 or 15 this year because we're selling more tickets, because we have a bigger venue and we can take more people. It is still going to sell out. If you want to come, please understand I am not hyping this. I say this mostly for the people who haven't been. The people that have been, they know. They're going to be there. They're going to be at the head of the line racing to get a ticket. The people that haven't been are like, oh, I bet he just says this. I'll get one sometime. No, please understand. If you are not ready to go, you're going to get buried by the people that are. It happens every year. The waiting list is always longer than the number of extra tickets we have. So just take that all in for what it's worth. Just real quick on refunds. If in the first couple, 3 weeks, you have to cancel, I just give your deposit back and that's it. As we get into it and we get closer to the event, I get to a point where I say, go into the Telegram group, sell your own ticket, because there's a point at which I have to just focus 100% on the event. It does sell out, the space is limited, and by the time you get into that state, I've already built out the event and all the expenses that go with it based on headcount. So there is, it's about 3 weeks before the event when I'm like, I'm not even trying to help you sell the ticket, because up till then, what I usually do is just go, hey, I'll put it out and I'll sell it for you, and usually it's no problem. As we get close, there is a point where you lose your deposit unless you take the initiative and sell your ticket. I think that's fair, and it's what I have to do within reason. I'm even thinking about doing like an impromptu side session, how to run an event, and explaining why we have to do things that way. And if you run an event, your entire view of this, like dealing with speakers, people want their spot changed, all of that will change the day you run an event. And after you run about 30 of them, it'll really change. All right. So with that, let's go ahead. I know it's a long intro, but a lot of stuff I want to make sure we covered. Again, workshop goes on sale Saturday morning, 9 Central Daylight Time. If you get up at 9:30, odds are it's long gone. All right. First segment today, Chris Rossini and Dr. Ron Paul, the road Trump took versus the road Trump promised, which is clearly less traveled by.
Yeah, the numbers are bad. Inflation is rising. Unemployment is rising at the same time. That's called stagflation. So as the economy worsens, we have to remember, you know, what happened over these last few months, because the change was so drastic. You know, what Trump campaigned on, what Americans voted for. He was supposed to come in to drastically shrink the government with DOGE. And it actually started to happen. Stuff was being exposed that was never exposed before. Things were being cut. Wars were supposed to stop. Fort Knox was going to be looked at. The Fed was going to be looked at. Ron Paul was being talked about to look at over the Fed. Then it was all reversed. And I don't think, you know, it was all fake, because you don't just bring Ron Paul into the spotlight. You ignore Ron Paul. You know, there's no benefit to them. It was all reversed. DOGE was stopped. The wars are still going. You know, all these days and months later, no Fort Knox, no Fed, all of that. And the opposite happened. Bigger government, big, beautiful bills. Big bankruptcy bill is what we call it. The wars are continuing, and now we're getting unemployment, which is the highest since 2021. Prices are going through the roof, and they're going to now print more money. I mean, what a massive, massive turnaround. I don't know what happened to cause this turnaround, but something happened, and we are heading in a very bad direction.
The biggest issue was the employment rate is going down. It looks bad. It, you know, you could look at it. It doesn't look that overwhelming, but from a financial viewpoint, it's the trend, and the trend is sharply down. I think today people recognize the economy is weak, and that all the hype given to it, that people, you know, want to say everything is rosy. I think today there's a lot of new realization that this economy is in trouble.
When presidents are cornered, as they often are, by their own bad policies, they often look for a war to change the subject. They messed everything up at home. Let's go point the fingers at some bad guy out there. This is how it works. Okay? It's a shame, but it's how it works. And I'm going to tell you, and we all know this, that Israel and Ukraine would love for the Americans to come and start dying for them in their wars. And this is despite the fact that Trump kept saying he's the only one that could keep us out of World War III and this and that. But, you know, FDR and Wilson both said the same thing. They're not going to send your kids to Europe. Your kids are not going to go die. They both campaigned that way, and they both did the world wars. So Trump could be the third. Let's hope to God that never happens, because that would be a war that nobody would win. But governments do dumb things, you know, they power corrupts, and it corrupts their mind. They will do the wrong thing if they can. You know, we have this empire that is supposed to come home. You got to close the bases, bring all the troops home. Trump is doing none of that. He's instead going to call the Department of Defense the Department of War, which, in a sense, makes it a more accurate name, because our military has not been for defense. The last time we were invaded was 1812 by the British. Nobody comes here to harm us. yet he wants to have a Department of War. It has not been defense for the last 100 years, so it'll be accurate. But if he's thinking it's going to be the Department of War to go to war, then we're in big trouble. The economy's in big trouble, and our lives are in big trouble because the government closes the iron fist when they go to war. So the Americans better speak up about against this. Trump supporters are as blind as ever. You know, anything he says goes. That better change, or we're going to be in big trouble.
I have to say that I don't know what the F is going on right now. And I wonder if, like, the madman governing is just Trump's M.O. to make you not know what's going on. I don't think for a minute we're about to send troops into Ukraine. I think the Russian drone shot down over Poland. We're freaking Ukrainian, by the way, and we know that now. And it was actually leaked by a member of the Ukrainian military that they freaking did it to try to goad us into the war. I don't think Trump's people are that stupid, but maybe they are. I don't know. They're talking about friggin' sending F-35s after Venezuela now. Like, the whole world is just falling apart, and this is part of my segment today. This is actually part of my segment today, though now it will be dominated by the Charlie Kirk thing. We are at a fevered pitch in utter chaos in this country. And we're at a point where even a person like me who has spent the last, you know, honestly, I've spent the last 30 years of my life. Like, I have paid attention since I was a 20-year-old kid. But I've spent the last 17 years of my life professionally analyzing the situations on the ground. And I have proven my track record of getting my predictions right at about 80 to 90%. And that is not an exaggeration. And I'm like, I don't freaking know. I don't freaking know. Because everything that makes sense for the current administration to do based on its own talking points is like walked right up to and then walked away from. I don't get it. I don't get it at all, other than the whole thing is actually orchestrated and Trump's just a puppet in the system. Whether he knows it or not, I don't know. Does the puppet know it has strings? I will tell you this, so that you can avoid being controlled. If you discover that you are a puppet in a play, somebody's pulling your strings. And the only way for you to be free is to cut the effing strings. And I will tell you who the strings are. It's not the FBI, the CIA, the NSA. It's not Donald Trump. It's not the cabinet. It's not the government. It's the media. The media is the nastiest, dirtiest, filthiest, lyingest, biggest piece of crap organization on the planet is the media. Save that thought for when I get to my segment at the end about what's going on and what will come because of what happened yesterday. With that in mind, let's talk about some other things that are maybe a little bit more beneficial to us. How about, hey, you know what you need right now in your life? Effing resilience, man. Effing resilience. I know somebody who knows something about resilience. And I can tell you that I know this person personally beyond our professional relationship. And she is one resilient freaking woman. Her name is Nicole Awesome Sauce. And she's going to talk to you now about developing that resilience in your own life, even acknowledging what happened yesterday as she does so.
Howdy, everyone. Nicole Sauce here from the Living Free in Tennessee podcast and Holler Roast Coffee. I wanted to talk to y'all through a series of thoughts I had on everyday resilience, what to do when things get hard. The reason I'm doing this is a lot of people in our network, in my network, in other networks are at that point of the year where they feel really, really burnt out. And it's pretty natural on a homestead at this time of year to have that feeling because everything needs to be done all at one time. But for some reason this year it seems a lot stronger, and I think part of that has to do with the cultural environment we're in. As a matter of fact, right now I am recording this segment and Charlie Kirk was shot in Utah. I don't know if that man is alive or dead, and I actually do care about the outcome on that one, but I also know that watching the news obsessively for a latest update is not going to change that system. And so instead, I'm recording this segment for y'all, and hopefully you will find it helpful. And also give a couple prayers for the Charlie Kirk situation, however it has turned out, because even if it's good or bad for him, I think there's an interesting road ahead right now for the country and for everyone involved and for his family. Anyway, so today I want to talk about systems. Systems over everything. You hear Jack, Nick, myself, other folks talk about permaculture, zones, systems thinking, design. And I think the coolest thing about permaculture is that it's a philosophy with principles that you can apply to more than just your land. You can apply it to your life. You can apply it to your relationships. It's very cool. So in a time of burnout, if you're always tired and behind, it might not be you. It might be your lack of systems. And that's great, because then you can forgive yourself, right? And then start working on the systems. I think about this a lot when I visit John and Amanda Willis at Special Operations Equipment. I think the first time I was there, a holler roast was much smaller then. And as a result of work with them, it is much bigger now. I walked in and I just saw shelves full of shipping boxes that were all taped together and ready to pack. And I thought, wow, that's amazing. And I said something. John's like, yeah, let me show you. And he showed how they had pre-made the boxes, and then they attach, you know, what needs to go in the box to the box, so somebody, you know, multiple people can help get that done. And it was a whole system. And I thought, you know, if instead of having to tape each individual box together, I set something like that up at Holler Roast, that system would be better. I would be more efficient. And then it's a win-win situation, because when you're pushing through a heavy time, you don't have to work as hard. But that doesn't mean you don't work hard, right? They work hard. They just don't work stupid hard. So that goes from how they pack and ship and make gear to having a commercial kitchen set up so that when they're doing dishes, they happen quickly with the spray nozzle thing. You know what I'm talking about. The dishwasher cycle, I think, takes 90 seconds on a commercial dishwasher versus how many hours on a modern dishwasher. These things are all time. These things all create bottlenecks. And when you think about a systems approach to that, it starts making sense to maybe make some decisions that are counter to the cultural norm. Everything has a process. And the process at SOE is not necessarily perfect, right? But they're efficient. And I'm sure it comes from John and Amanda not wanting to be frustrated, right? It saves energy and brain space when you know you can just do the thing. And when something frustrates one of them long enough, I'm sure it gets addressed. They don't ask, like, why is this happening? Woe is me, blah, blah, blah. You don't hear that coming out of SOE. They ask, what system needs fixing? Or what can we do differently? Or how can we be more efficient? So systems are how you protect your future self, or as I like to call it, future you. So past me sometimes does something really cool, like file things where they need to go. And current me sometimes is irritated because it took longer to do a task than I wanted it to. But then future me, when I need to go find the thing that's filed, is super happy with past me because the system was adhered to. That's what I mean about systems are how you protect your future self. If something frustrates you every day or every week, you probably have a system that needs addressing. And you want to fix the system, not the symptom, unless the symptom is a crisis symptom, like a pipe, I don't know, leaking, right? You don't have to replumb your whole house, but definitely stop the leak and then look at the system that led to a situation where you have a pipe that's leaking. Is there something that can be done to fix that? And for this, I like to start simple. One frustration that you run into every day or every week, and a small one. So if there's a thing that's blowing you up hard every day, that's not the one. You're going to come in with all sorts of emotional baggage to that. Start with something small that's frustrating you, right? Especially if you're exhausted. And you'll find often that those smaller things lead to bigger results. This weekend, I took on a system after looking around that I knew was failing horribly. And it's one I'm usually pretty good at. My storage for pantry items in my kitchen, which I call my short-term storage, was a mess. the counter on top of it was, like, in front of it was piled with things that needed to go in there. They weren't in there because they couldn't fit in there. It was one thing that was draining me every time I walked into my kitchen and just kind of looked at that chaos every single day. It was like a little gnat in my ear going, and I could have pushed through like a huge house cleaning thing and still had that problem. It would just look tidier. Instead, I thought, what's the system that's supposed to be happening here? In short-term storage, in my kitchen, it's supposed to be things I use on a regular basis, and it's a small amount of it, right? And then the bigger amounts are in long-term storage, and in that way, I have room for everything, I can find everything, and I have visibility when I go from long-term storage to short-term storage in the pantry, and when that change happens, I know it's time to reorder the thing in long-term storage. The other thing, though, and this is part of the Power Pantry system, is your tastes and needs change over time, and you want to be storing what you use and using what you store, as we like to say, and sometimes your short-term storage looking like my short-term storage is an indication that there has been a change in what you use. And your cabinets are full of things you don't use. And the things you do use are on the counter and top of, in front of the cabinets, right? So I took everything out of everything. I made my kitchen look like a major explosion of stuff. Took one wave through and got rid of the things I didn't use. Became super overwhelmed, called a friend and said, talk me through this. It's very overwhelming, but I really want this back together and fixed all the way so that next week when I go into the week of, you know, producing food while also producing coffee and shows and getting ready for Self-Reliance Festival and teaching classes here, I'm not inhibited by this. And in fact, it empowers me to have a more efficient, nutritious experience here and not just order pizza or tacos or something. And my friend came up, it was tactical. He was like, okay, so what is all this stuff? And I told him it was mostly like herbal teas and ingredients, like raw ingredients that we use. And he said, okay, why do you have a half gallon jar of chocolate mint tea in your short-term storage? And I was like, that's a good point. And he said, what I do is I have a bunch of pint jars. And then I have the bigger jars somewhere else. And I was like, okay. So what I did is I went through and put everything in the same size mason jar, which is a great storage thing, labeled it so I could see what was there, got rid of anything else that really shouldn't have been in there, and like got the, you know, like the baked goods and the baked goods and all of those things, and put the stuff in long-term storage also in an organized fashion so I could find them. Because my fear had been if I go into long-term storage with things like chocolate mint, which I make a lot of chocolate mint tea, never want to run out of that. I was afraid it would be kind of sucked into chaos because we had just been in like a construction project in long-term storage for a long time. But the construction project's done, so it actually is stable now. And when it was done, dinner wasn't until 8 o'clock that night because I worked on that for a really long time. When it was done, as a result, the whole week flowed better. Why? Because when I had my cup of evening tea, I could just go into that cabinet and find it. When I wanted to figure out, oh, it's a really busy day on Monday, so how are we going to have a crock pot meal or something so that it's on time and we're ready to go, I was able to access everything I needed efficiently, get it all put up, and have a normal everyday household experience because the system was back up and running. So my theory on this is even a half-baked system beats burnout every time. And when you start with some of those, like that's a really mundane thing, right? When you stop with some of those more mundane things like Laundry Mountain or the pantry not working right, or just sitting down and writing the meal plan for dinner for the week and making sure you have what you need for that, which I say just, but that can take anywhere from 1 to 4 hours, depending on who you are and how you work, and if you need to go grocery shopping. That will help you with burnout in the long run for a couple of reasons. One, you burn out when you don't stay healthy. And ways we don't stay healthy are not getting enough sleep, not eating nutritious food, and not getting enough exercise and not making enough space to mentally process what needs to be processed. When you get the systems in place, you start participating in the system, and then you're not always thinking as hard. And you create more space for yourself. And in the case of this one, we had a healthier week because I did the short-term power pantry system reset. So this week, think about what's frustrating you, what small thing you can turn into a system and get it set up. See if next week doesn't get better. And if it does, choose another frustration and address it again. All right. If you are interested in getting to know stellar people who can help you with your systems thinking and a whole lot of other cool stuff, consider coming out October 4th and 5th to the Self-Reliance Festival. It's in Camden, Tennessee this year at the Birdsong Marina, a new location. You can rent an RV spot there. There are cabins, and your ticket does include tent camping in a rustic campsite. We've got a kids program. We've got a youth program being done by Alan Booker. You know, yeah, that Alan Booker. Man, the stuff he told me they're going to do today on the phone is awesome. Anyway, grab your ticket now, selfrelliancefestival.com. Get $10 off with the coupon code LFTN. Make it a great week.
I just want to add on to one thing she said, and then we'll go to our next segment. And that was, you know, even a half-baked or half-ass or something like that system is better than no system. And she does a good job of explaining it after. But I'm going to add to it. And that is that once you have a system in place to deal with a situation that is recurrent, and I completely agree, start with the things that happen often, because that is exactly what systems are best for. A system for something that happens once a year is useful. We call it a protocol, though, right? A system for something you do every day, like publishing a podcast, a punch list to make sure you don't forget anything, something I need to add to my after the production show that I haven't for 17 years, I haven't needed it, and I've made some mistakes after production, like not sending out the email even though I shared it on social media, things like that. That would be something that has to happen every day. It's a good thing to have a system in place for. Then, not only is it necessarily that what you avoid might have been catastrophic or anything, it's just annoying. And then when it happens over and over again, you start blaming yourself instead of taking corrective action. If you put a system in place and it doesn't fully solve the problem, you can then fine-tune the system. The first step is putting a system in place. Excellent segment from Nicole, but that's what we would expect. Now let's talk about bringing a new puppy home. That's a little bit happier of a subject than a lot of things going on in the world right now.
Hello, TSP crew. This is Joel Riles with Fortress Canine and Canine Academy coming back at you with another expert counsel segment. Okay, so I had someone who's been training with me for a while start asking me questions about what do I do when I bring a puppy into the house for the first time. Obviously, on our training facility, we're set up to be able to work a bunch of young dogs and older dogs all at the same time. But it's a lot different when, before I had a facility, when I would get a puppy and I would bring it home and I would start training it. And that's kind of how the average person is going to experience a new puppy, right? They're going to get a new puppy. They're going to bring it home. What do I do with it in my house all day? I can't just sit here and focus on it the entire time. And I said, well, I need to do a video on that to tell you guys how I used to bring my puppies through their initial training. And essentially, one thing that's really important to keep in mind is you are always training your dog, always through its whole life. Whatever you allow it to do, you'll get more of. Whatever you discourage, you will get less of. You're always going to be finding things periodically that it's like, I don't like that. Let's fix it. Or you'll come across things where you're like, ooh, I want to teach my dog to do this. Let me figure out how to do that. So when you bring your puppy home right off the bat, you're starting to train that puppy, whether you think you're training it or not. So the couple things that are really important is I want a good collar. I typically start my pups off on a flat collar unless they just are so high energy that they don't respond to the flat collar. Then I go ahead and put a prong collar on them. But if they'll respond to the flat collar, I start there. I want to make sure I have a collar, a lead, and a crate that properly fits the dog. If you have a puppy, So she's one of my small dogs. But if you have a little puppy, like an eight-week-old puppy, do not put it in a 36-inch crate. They will go to one end of the crate and poop and pee and go to the other end of the crate and lay down. The crate should be small enough that they cannot go to one end and go to the bathroom and go to the other end and lay comfortably without laying in it. That's one of the things that deters them from going to the bathroom in a crate. So the downside is you got to get a small crate when they're little, and you've got to buy a couple extra crates as they get bigger. Now, once they're pretty well crate trained, you can usually jump up to what you anticipate them using the rest of their lives, and most of the time they're fine. If they start having issues again for some reason, you might have to buy an intermediate crate between those two sizes. But for the most part, you want a crate that fits the dog, a lead, and a collar. And what I do is I want to start teaching my dogs two things right off the bat. Number one is your crate is not a bad thing. Going into your crate, you have a little chew toy in there. Hang out. I will come get you before too long. So I want them to get comfortable in their crate, kind of like it's their bedroom. And then the second thing I want to teach my dog is, how do we move around together? Right? So what I typically do with a puppy is I clip them onto their little flat collar, and my leads have a clip at both ends and a floating ring. I put that lead around my waist. I clip it in, and I'm going to move a little slower when this is happening because it's a puppy. It doesn't know how to move with me yet, right? But it's attached to me, and I'm going to be doing whatever I'm doing around the house just a little bit slower with a puppy attached to me. And if I sit down to do some computer work, I'm going to sit down and I'm going to tell the puppy to lay down at my feet. I'm going to use my foot and I'm going to put my foot over the lead so that it kind of holds the puppy in a lay down position. And I'm going to praise the dog every couple minutes, good plutz or whatever your lay down command is. And I'm just going to get them used to, when I sit down, you lay at my feet and chill. If you need a break, put them in their crate. Typically, I try to keep the crate time frames to 20 to 30 minutes, but at night, you are going to need to crate them longer. Okay, so let's just run through a morning to an evening routine real briefly so that you can get an idea of what I'm talking about. So in the morning, I wake up, I come and get the puppy, I open the crate, I clip them in, take them right out to use the bathroom, leave it, putz, because they're going to need to go to the bathroom after they've been in the crate for a while. They go outside, they use the bathroom, that's great, I bring them back in, I feed and water my puppy. After they finish eating and drinking, I put them right back in the crate, and I set a timer for 20 to 30 minutes. I do this because it's going to take them a little bit of time to process that food, and then they're probably going to have to go to the bathroom again. So after about 20, 30 minutes, I take them out of their crate, and I want to start setting a pattern here. How do I want my dog to come out of the crate, right? So they, I open the crate door, I kind of grab a hold of their collar, and I get them used to just waiting. They're not really going to know what set means. They're not going to know what lay down means. But I just want them to get used to coming out and just kind of waiting so I can clip them in to their collar. Then we're going to go out to the outside, and they're going to get a chance to use the bathroom. If they go to the bathroom, great. Now you're going to get to hang out with me. If they don't go to the bathroom, I bring them back inside, put them in their crate, close it up, tell them good crate, and I set the timer for like another 10 or 15 minutes. During this time, the whole purpose here is they go back into their crate until they go to the bathroom, right? Once they go to the bathroom, now they can spend time with me. This will minimize your accidents in the house, and it will speed up your housebreaking time. If your dog starts to whine, you're going to notice there's two types of whine in a crate. There's one that is, hey, I want out of my crate, let me out. You do not reward that whine. You always give them a little correction. I typically walk up and bump the crate with my foot, and I tell them, hey, cut that out, be quiet. And I walk away. If you reward that whine by giving the dog attention, you will only get more of that whine. I want my dog to learn to lay in their crate quietly. They can chew on their chew toy. I will come get you when I'm ready. And so I never reward them whining. But there's a different type of a whine that says, hey, I have to go to the bathroom. And if you pay attention, you'll really quickly realize, ooh, that's the bathroom whine. I want you to tell me when you have to go to the bathroom so I can take you outside and we don't have an accident in the house. And so if I hear that whine, let's say I set the alarm for 10 minutes, but 2 minutes in, I hear that whine. I go and I get the puppy, and I actually kind of have a little conversation with him. I tell him, hey, don't let me down, right? This sounds like a pee whine, but if you're playing with me and you're trying to just get away with something, I'm not going to listen to that whine anymore. And I'll take them outside. Typically, they will go to the bathroom. I praise them. I don't pet them while they're going to the bathroom. Obviously, that's going to distract them. But verbally, I'm like, oh, we use get busy. So I go, oh, good, get busy. Good, get busy. Atta boy or atta girl. Good, get busy. And so I reward them for going to the bathroom outside. And then they get to hang out with me. And we'll hang out until I start getting tired of doing it, right? Maybe I have to do something that it's too much of a pain to have the puppy with me. Or maybe it's just we've gone for an hour or two and they've been moving around with me. And now I'm going to put them back in their crate. A couple things to watch for. If you're doing admin work and things like that, and you're sitting in a chair and you put the dog in it down and you put your foot on top of the lead, make sure they can't reach your laptop charging cable ask me how I know, right? These are things just to be aware of. Make sure there's not things within their purview that they can reach that you don't want them to chew on. Or if there are, you're paying attention to them, frequently checking in. Hey, don't put your teeth on that. Here's your little chew toy. Chew on this instead, right? So you want to pay attention to those types of things. This is going to take some extra focus for you for a couple of weeks, but pretty quickly, the dogs will get this down pretty well. And after I did this for about 2-3 days, because I really wanted the dog to start bonding with me, and then we start working obedience. This is seats. This is lay down. This is place. This is wait. Once I have a puppy waiting, by the end of the first week, your puppy should wait in its place for 30 minutes to an hour without too much trouble. Maybe a little bit if you leave the room for too long, they'll come and look for you. But for the most part, they should be sitting, laying down, and waiting in their place in the house and walking pretty decently at your side. So if you're spending 15 to 20 minutes a day with focused training time and then just integrating them as I'm describing through the rest of your day, within a week, you'll have your dog pretty well fitting into your life, and then it's only going to get better from there. So I hope that's been helpful. I am going to be putting this video into Module 1 of Canine Academy. And if you want to check out Canine Academy and get more help on training a dog you already have, or if you're anticipating getting a puppy, go check out Canine Academy. Go to thesurvivalpodcast.com. Click on the link on Jack's website, and it'll take you to our website, and you can see all our different options. We have a basic plan all the way up to an advanced plan. You can check those out. Feel free to reach out if you have any questions. You can email me at joel@fortresscanine.com. And if you're looking to purchase a working line puppy or a fully trained protection dog, check out fortresscanine.com. Click on that consult. We'll get in contact, and we'll see if we can help you out. Remember, until next time, train hard and stay safe.
I'm just going to add on to this with every time I have dealt with trying to help a person who's been trying to train a puppy. And I'm not saying that if you do crate train, all the problems go away, because I've had people who still have some issues with it, with crate training. But when it's like a chronic problem and you're like, that shouldn't be the case after you've had this dog for 60 days, and you ask the question, are you crate training? They not only say no, they then justify how it's cruel to put the dog in a crate. It's not. I agree with Joel. The crate, the box, whatever you call it, your house, your den, whatever you call it for the puppy, is never punishment. And dogs enjoy the secure feeling of the crate. When we first got Belle, here's an example of that. A couple times she put, you know, Charlie was still around. He was still pretty dominant when we first got her. And she pushed him a bit, and he snapped at her. And you know what she did? She ran to where? Her crate, because it's a safe place. Okay? It is not a punishment. And the only thing you do by resisting the proven and very humane practice of crate training a puppy is make life more stressful for the dog and yourself. Please don't do that to yourself. Get a crate of the appropriate size. Follow the guidelines of many, many professionals, not just Joel. And 90% of the issues with raising a puppy will go away. I didn't say 100%. All right, moving on, let's talk about affordable Western hunting with Mike Melito.
What is going on, TSP? Michael here of Gunfighter Life Podcast. Jack asked for some expert counsel content. I thought I would talk about affordable Western hunting. Two main reasons. Well, three. One, you guys didn't give me any questions this week, so send your questions in. Two, Western hunting, what most people think of, has gotten crazy expensive. It might be, you know, 10, 20, 30 grand for an elk hunt, a guided elk hunt, and like 30 grand would be cheap for a sheep hunt if you can get a tag. Or you might have to put in for years and years and hundreds of dollars to get a lottery to draw an elk tag. I don't live out here. I'm blessed to live somewhere where I can go and get an over-the-counter elk tag for $40 or whatever they cost now, $40-$50. I do that on purpose. I have other areas to live in what I would call the Wild West a lot for that reason. And more for the next reason I'm going to tell you about. Public land. You are part owner of millions and millions of acres of beautiful public land in the West. You don't really have that in the East. I grew up on the East Coast. Grew up in the South, hunting and fishing there. And I know what a challenge it can be. Whereas property and land to hunt on. You are part owner of millions and millions of acres of public land. As much right to be there as I do. It's your land. That is awesome. And it would be a shame if you're an outdoorsman, a hunter, to not get in on that. But again, if you're trying to do an elk hunt or a sheep hunt, that may be really expensive. And if you have the money, hats off to you. I'm here to talk about affordable Western DIY hunts that you can do. All right, the first one. This one is not for you if you are prone to gambling or wasting money. This is not the one for you. But it's an affordable flight from a lot of places. Fly into Vegas. Vegas is a big city. It's got a cheap airport. And they got a lot of cheap flights going in and out of there. A lot of good rental car companies out of there. Vegas is kind of unique, though, as opposed to big cities back east. You can fly into there, and you can be out in vast wilderness. Be out somewhere where you can hunt in 15 minutes. You can be out in vast wilderness in an hour. Now, getting a deer tag in Nevada is pretty hard. But unless they've changed it in the last year or two, quite a bit of hunting and operating out of Vegas myself, you can hunt coyote or coyote if that's how you say it, but coyote and jackrabbit even without a license. They're not game species. Talk about having a lot of fun. Rent yourself an SUV with four-wheel drive. You want a different landscape. You want public land. Something like 90-something percent of Nevada is federally owned land. Now, a lot of that's like test sites and military bases, but the vast majority of it is huntable land. So you can be out and hunting pretty quickly. Nevada is a huge state with a ton of public land. And you want the cheap DIY, and you want a totally different landscape, totally different sunsets, totally different flora and fauna. Get out in the Mojave Desert or the Great Basin Desert. Jackrabbits, coyote. Anything from a 22 Magnum. 22 long rifle would work for the jackrabbit, but 22 Magnum, 22 Hornet, 223 is your easy, safe bet. Make sure you bring water, and make sure you bring a compass. But that's an affordable, easily attainable hunt. You don't even need tags. And again, unless you check your local game laws or the game laws where you're going, they may have changed it or something, but you don't even need tags. You can just go out and do it. Little bonus on that one, if you want to forage yucca fruit and it's out where you're at, it's going to be something totally different you probably haven't done before unless you're from there. Also, juniper berries, if you're into making like the tea out of them, they store really well. You could bring a bunch home. That's an affordable, attainable hunt for most people, I think, if you wanted to do it. The next one is going to be Idaho, Montana, less so Wyoming, but Idaho, Montana for wolf and grouse. This is the area that I live in, the greater Yellowstone ecosystem area. There's a ton of public land. And again, elk tags can be hard to get and quite expensive for a non-resident. But wolf tags, generally over-the-counter, and they're not expensive at all. The seasons, I think they're like 365 days. Is it easy to hunt wolves? No, it's not. But I've done it. It can be done. And there is a lot of them. Their population has exploded since they got reintroduced in Yellowstone. There's nothing wrong with having wolves in Yellowstone Park. But outside the park, even resident hunters are going to be happy, I think, that you're there, as long as you don't mess up their deer hunt. And I would say don't even go during elk season or whatever. But there's a ton of wolves. If you want something totally different, beautiful country, talk about millions of acres, public land, the Frank Church, River of No Return Wilderness, the Sawtooth Wilderness, the Bitterroot, just amazing. Obviously, a cool thing to do there if you're in the area and you want to take a day trip, go to Yellowstone. If you've never seen Yellowstone, you should see Yellowstone. I recommend going to the north or the west entrance, not the main entrance, to avoid all the tourists. But if you like the touristy stuff, do that too. Also, another cool side thing you can do, it's often, as long as you're in season, legal to hunt grouse. Grouse are a fun thing to hunt. You may not see a wolf, but you'll get to see some really cool country. You probably will see a couple of grouse. Make sure it's the right kind of grouse and that you can hunt it. Do a little bit of studying before you get out there. But like a lot of places with grouse, you can hunt them a lot of times with a rifle. So whatever your rifle out there, you know, doing your wolf hunting with, 243, 308, 30-06, whatever it is, you take a couple of grouse. Grouse are good eating. Instead of waiting 10 years till you draw your elk tag, come out and have an awesome, beautiful trip in the wilderness. Probably shoot some grouse, maybe get a wolf. Also, I'm going to throw in real quickly, if you want to get a deer, look at whitetail. And you might think, I can hunt whitetail here, and you can, but not in the same kind of country you can hunt them in Idaho, Wyoming, Montana. totally different country, totally different experience. Animals act totally different. You're going to hunt them totally different. Make sure you have good boots. Make sure you have good pants. But a lot of times it's easier to get a whitetail tag than a mule deer tag because they're moving into a lot of areas where they're not native to. They're not really regulated the same. So you might look into that. You really do want to do a meat hunt. Okay, one more. I know I'm going long. I'm going to go quickly. Oregon Coast black bear. If you've never been to the Oregon Coast, you'd be amazed at how sparsely populated it is. Get outside of Portland and Salem, the Oregon Coast is very, very sparsely populated. Tons of open public land that's beautiful. Bonus there, if you're going in the fall, there's you would have to be bad at eating to starve to death in the coastal Oregon rainforest. There's so many berries. So if you like foraging and doing stuff like that, there's so many berries, it's ridiculous. And if you're hunting bear, a good strategy is to go where the berries are anyway. So if you want to forage and do a bunch of that stuff, thimbleberries, blackberries, cranberries, all kinds of cool stuff. Now, bear hunting's going to be hard there. They've outlawed hunting them there with hounds and baiting, but that means you're going to be equal with everybody else. You're not going to be competing with people that are using hounds or using bait. And if you've never seen the Oregon coast, giant rocks, you know, sticking out of the ocean, the massive trees that dwarf anything on the East Coast, seals and sea lions everywhere, check out the Central Oregon coast. Anywhere from Brookings up to Astoria. Obviously, stay away from the city, but there's so much coastline and so much beautiful rainforest that's thick with black bear. And just totally different than you're going to get on the East Coast. I did a whole episode on this much longer years ago on Gunfighter Life, about like the last great affordable safari or something like that. Maybe it's time to do a whole new episode, but you might be able to find it on there. You know how to use search engines. I know I went a bit long on this. I love hunting. I love hunting the West. And I want you to realize that you don't have to spend tens of thousands of dollars or wait, you know, however many years to draw an elk tag or an antelope tag. If you do and you have the money, fantastic. But not everybody does. And you are part owner of millions of acres of public land. It's rugged and wild and just beautiful. The heavens declare the glory of God and the firmament shows us his handiwork. Get out in nature, especially get out west where it's vast, wide open areas. Get out into a deserted place and rest a while. It's beautiful. Wait a bit long. Hopefully Jack is okay with that. I appreciate you guys and have a blessed day.
Okay, I am multitasking today, and if I missed it, I'm sorry, but I didn't hear him say anything about pronghorn. So I'm going to add pronghorn specifically in like Wyoming, Montana, in the plains, to something that you can look into at being reasonably affordable. It's not hard to get a draw tag for at all as a non-resident. There is lots of publicly available hunting ground, and they are not the smartest critters in the shed. If you're looking for like a trophy, you know, pronghorn, a buck, that may not be as doable. But the last time I checked, the public hunting success rate on pronghorn antelope in both Montana and Wyoming is north of 90%. So that's about as good as it gets in a public hunt on public ground, you know, not guided, not on some kind of hunting reserve or something. So if he mentioned it, I missed it because I was getting ready for my segment and what have you. And with that, let's go ahead and before we get into my segment, let's hear from Andy McCann on weight loss.
Hello and good morning. This is Andy McCann coming to you from Woodstock, Georgia, where I own CrossFit Garage. If you're a local, come see us. If you're not, just email in and I'll try my best to help you out. This question comes from Mike from Pennsylvania. Essentially, hey, I'm trying to lose weight. How do I do it? He gives some details below. I'm going to run through a general perspective for you guys to give you some ideas. This is take two. I already did it and it was way too long, so here I go shorter. I do have this coming out as a podcast on mine, which is Fitness, Food, and Finances. It'll be episode 223, so you can go through and hit all the details there. So I'm going to go a little bit quicker and see if I can make it under the time domain. You have calorie restriction. That is simply I'm eating less than the calories I'm burning. So I'm either burning a lot more or eating less. You're going to have to use MyFitnessPal or MyNetDiary or something like that to track your food intake as well as something to track your exercise to make sure that you are, you know, burning more than you're taking in. That's an easy one. People have been doing this forever. If you grew up in the 70s, this is what all of our parents were into. The next one is kind of newer, and this is a big one for Jack. It's the low-carb or ketogenic diet. We've talked a lot about this. It's basically staying below 100 carbs a day, but maybe above 20. So you're eating some, but you're still in this ketosis world. It's got a lot of good effects, and it works really well. You can watch his YouTube journey, where he outlined every day that he did this. It's pretty awesome. You can go a step deeper and get into the carnivore diet, which is all meats, no plants. This is what I'm doing right now with Evan to fight an autoimmune issue. Would I give this to anybody? No, it is super restrictive. I don't know. This is really tough. I actually enjoy it. He hates it, but it works. I eat about 4,000 calories a day, and I have dropped from 168 down to 158, and I've been hovering right there. Had to add in some fat to keep myself from losing more weight. So, good one. It can get expensive, except for the fact that you never snack again, so and you don't have leftovers. So there's that. So maybe it averages out. Next one is intermittent fasting. I think this is most people do this already anyway. You go to sleep and you wake up. So there's already intermittent fasting. But the idea is your fast window is much greater than your eat window. So typically it's going to be a 16-hour fast window and an 8-hour eat window. Or you're going to make it the eat window even smaller. The problem with this one is it doesn't account for any type of control or quality of the food. It's just eat whatever you want in that window. And we hope you eat less. And so it's a calorie restrictive type of diet based on window. And I don't know, I'm not a big fan of that one. Then you got the other side, plant-based and vegan. These guys typically die. Just kidding. It does work. But I don't know how it works. After doing what I've been doing for the last year, I don't know. But I have got folks from India that are at my gym that eat plant-based and vegan, and they crush the workouts and they're doing great. So yes, it can work. I did not ask them if they supplement anything else, but it limits the things you can choose, which is great, so it kind of gives you freedom. It's just vegetables. And in this one, you can make it in your backyard. You could figure out how to grow almost everything that you want to eat or beg, borrow, and steal from somebody else growing it. That way you avoid all the pesticides and all the other bad stuff. All right, another one that I really hate, but it does work for a moment, is meal replacements, shakes and bars. You can get on something like Jenny Craig, which is more than shakes and bars, I know, but you can buy their foods, and they are going to give you these ratios that they want and tell you when and how to eat. The problem with these are that it's not hard, it's very hard to sustain over time, so it's just not something you're going to do for like 10 years. And typically when you bounce off of these, you gain all the weight plus some back. So I'm just not a big fan of it. Plus, you typically are going to trade it up for another problem. Yes, I lost a lot of weight, but now I'm pre-diabetic because they put a lot of sugar in these things or a lot of sweetness into them. Another one that you can use is tracking your macros. This is big in the CrossFit community. The golden ratio is 30% protein, 40% carbs, and 30% fat. So every meal should follow that ratio. You have to use some sort of tool like MyFitnessPal or MyNetDiary because you have to know what these ratios are and you got to be very specific to them or they say it doesn't work. So the next ones are mixing up your training. So there's HIIT, high intensity training. It's not food, but it does burn. Or weightlifting, which as you build muscle, the muscle is more metabolically expensive. Thus, it causes your metabolism to go up and you burn more food. Yes, it weighs more than not having muscle, but your clothes fit better and it's upping your metabolism. So another fun one, just because I got a little extra time. A long, long time ago, and actually in the 70s, I think, people would intentionally eat tapeworm eggs. And so they would know that, hey, if I ate this, I would lose weight over time because you're growing a tapeworm inside of you. I definitely don't recommend this, but at least we've come far from these ideas of putting parasites in our body to help us lose weight. Guys, it's not incredibly tough. It's just not easy. You have to pick a method and try it out. Not every method works for everybody. If you want more details, go listen to the episode. I think, like I said, it was 224 maybe. And it'll probably be called How to Lose Weight, something simple like that. And if you need help, there's easy guidance out there. One, you could ask ChatGPT. Two, hire somebody local to help you out. If you can't hire anybody local, you don't know what to hire. contact me. I'll help you find somebody out there. If you want to hire me, great. I'm $1,000 an hour. Or track your food for 2 weeks, and then I'll help you for free. I know. Once you've tracked it, you're going to be like, oh, I know what the problem is. And that's kind of why I do that. Guys, I'm Andy McCann here with CrossFit Garage. If you're out here in Woodstock, Georgia, come see us. Y'all take care.
I like that he covered everything, including things you would never do. And I think there is more than one way to lose weight, because it's not a good idea, but let's be honest, starvation works. But it's not the best approach. One thing I will take issue with, though, are people that say, like, the calories in, calories out formula doesn't work. You're wrong. It might not be the best overriding formula to follow, but of course it does. When people say, well, I know somebody, and they cut their calories, and they didn't lose any weight. In fact, they gained weight. Well, they probably shit-canned their metabolism. And even though they were reducing calories from what they were consuming, they actually shit-canned their metabolism to they were still burning less. That will not persist if the cutting is sufficient. If you put somebody on, let's say, a ridiculously low diet, like 800 calories a day, you will, over time, literally starve them to death. They will lose weight. Anybody that says they won't is in denial of reality because of an agenda or personally induced self-brainwashing. Because there's never been a case like, hey, we put this guy in a concentration camp and he got fat. It doesn't happen. With that, let's now talk about the Charlie Kirk incident and, more importantly, the fallout. And again, this will be in video for those of you who want to share it or take it in as a standalone or something like that. The link will be in the notes for today's episode, and I'll probably share it on social media, put it on the blog, things like that as well. All right, we are live, and I just want to say for those watching the live or watching the video later, this is not a full podcast. On Thursdays, I do an expert counsel Q&A show. We had a great show today. Full cast of expert counsel members, all types of questions being answered. The audio for it will be available in a link that I forgot to add it when I set the stream up. I'll add it later on for you, or you can go to the survivalpodcast.com and look for episode 3730. Whatever today's episode is, I don't even know. It's been a crazy couple of days just getting back. Yes, 3730. All right, so I'm going to talk about the Charlie Kirk thing, which is what everybody's doing. I'm going to try to take a different approach to it. I'm going to talk a little bit about let's rein in the conspiracy theories and all of the freaking, you know, Call of Duty ballistic expertise and shit like that. But I want to talk more about what I think is going to happen because of this. And I think this is a very, very, very dangerous time in, as I put it on Tuesday, the simulation. Of course, I'm kind of channeling Elon Musk there. Not that he's my hero or anything like that. He is what he is. But he refers to what we live in as the simulation. I take that more of like a dark humor joke than to be reality. But on Tuesday of this week, before any of this shit happened, I posted something that became remarkably prophetic in that, you know, where Jack's like, I was right and I didn't want to be. We are entering a very dangerous time in the simulation. And this segment was going to happen today anyway. I don't know if I would have done it as a video. I might have just done it as an audio because I already felt that the tension in this country was incredibly palpable. I could feel a change going around, and it was directly related to, but not because of, INRA or INRIA. Oh, I can't pronounce her name. I don't want to disgrace her, but the young pretty Ukrainian immigrant who was stabbed in the neck to death by a guy that was released 14 times, had beat up his own sister, had called 911 and said that they put things in his body, man-made things in his body that was making him hurt people and controlling his thoughts, deeds, and they put this guy on the street and he killed this girl. And then the media basically blamed the right for noticing that it happened after they spent 2 weeks trying to hide it and pretend it didn't happen. And on top of it, when the full footage came out, there were about 6 people on that train car with that young woman. When the guy that stabbed her left, I don't expect anybody to be a hero. I want you to try to help, but I get it. He's gone. There's no more danger. All of those people sat and watched that woman die. They watched her die. They didn't give 2 square roots of F all. And no one called that out either. No one even had the decency to go hold her hand while she died, even if they couldn't have done anything at that point. And the way that was being handled by the media, who is the ultimate in scum, as much as you might hate governments and politicians and bureaucrats and everybody else, the filthiest scum in society today work at MSNBC, CNN, et al. All of them, including the one you like, okay? They are the scummiest of the scum. Yesterday when Kirk was shot, we didn't know if he was going to make it or not yet. There was actually a scumbag from, I think it was CBS. It doesn't even matter because they're all scum, that said, well, we don't even know. We don't even know yet if it was actually this. It could have been one of his supporters firing off a celebration shot, right? There's been people already fired because the networks so dug their own grave with this that they said, well, you know, what else did he expect would happen? And I'm not going to put examples of this up, but this is happening from the media and from the retards of TikTok is what I'll call it. Of course, that expands beyond TikTok, social media in general, Blue Sky, Twitter, Facebook. He had it coming. I would have done videos, and I don't want to play this because I don't want to add to what I'm about to tell you I think is going to happen because it's about to get fucking bad. Before I do, though, I want to say all of you conspiracy people who are already talking like you know shit you can't possibly know, can you do me a favor? Can you do me a favor for the weekend? Shut the fuck up. Shut the fuck up till we know more because more and more is coming out already. There's the Call of Duty ballistics experts. It was actually a handgun from the... No, it was dude on the roof. As soon as the roof dude shows up, everybody's like, oh, now they're experts on what a Mauser is, right? It can't be a .30-06 and a Mauser because they're 8mm. Did you learn that in Call of Duty or some like World War II video game or something? Mauser's a manufacturer, you asshole. It's also a style of action. I'm going to show you the gun that they've released a picture of. And by the way, even the MilSERP, tens of thousands of German-made military surplus 8mm Mausers were brought into the United States and converted to .30-06 because at the time they were brought in, it was very hard to get a hold of 8mm ammo. It's still not the easiest thing in the world. All right, so here's what I want to just cover before we get into the fallout. Can everybody shut up until we actually know something? And stop, it was Israel, and it was, you know, it was the Ukrainians, and it was the space aliens, and... Who the hell, and talking about it like you know, saying, hey, maybe we should look at this. I get it, right? Let's talk about, like, what do you do when you're analyzing a murder and looking for a suspect? You look for motive, right? You look for opportunity, means, and then proof beyond a reasonable doubt. That's a legal standard. Can we do that? Because here's a few things already. Number one, anybody that says anything on the TV, it becomes a talking point. And then even if it changes, it stays a talking point. So we heard over and over and over a distance, 200 yards. Okay. Yes, that's what somebody said who half-assed estimated it at the scene in the middle of chaos. But now it becomes hundreds of yards and it had to be a professional. There's something called mapping tools. I know it's crazy. And we actually know where it happened. So we can actually like pull up an image like the one on my screen right now of where it happened. The shot was roughly 142 yards. Now, it could have been 141 yards, 143 yards, 139 yards. We don't know exactly what position on the roof the guy was by a foot or two. And the muzzle where the round exited would actually be the distance of the shot. All right? But it's around 140 yards. You don't need to be a professional to make a 140-yard shot on a human silhouette with a scoped rifle, which, by the way, that's what it was. Okay? This is not hard to understand. You do not have to be a Mossad operative to make this shot, right? People say, well, it's not just the shot. It's the exfil. Did you learn that on fucking video games too, moron? The guy got down off the roof, ran away, and threw the freaking gun in the woods. That's all we know right now. Again, my wife is usually a pretty good source. She said that they've arrested a young kid. I'm going to show you a picture of a young kid in a minute, the way we call kids kids when we're as old like we are. So I don't really know. And like, here, watch this. Here's an example right here. I don't mean to pick on you, Idaho Puma. Security failure. Why no Overwatch? Because he's a freaking influencer at a college. This isn't the president of the United States. Will you people stop this freaking nonsense? Will you please? This is not J.D. Vance. This is not Donald Trump. It's not even freaking Joe Biden. It's not even Kamala Harris. Charlie Kirk doesn't get Overwatch. Charlie Kirk has a few goons following him around that are mainly looking for somebody to come up and shoot him with a pistol or try to assault him in some way. Because that's all that they can actually do. You can't cover this stuff the way that in your mythological head they do on like a show like 24 with Kiefer Sutherland. This is the real world. We don't know the answers yet. That's what I'm getting to. Next, the gun. Again, when it came out that the police had leaked to, of all people, Louder with Crowder, well, whatever, maybe somebody in the FBI or whatever is a fanboy and chose to leak it that way, that it was a Mauser in 30-06. And everybody became an expert. Mausers are 8mm. No, Mausers, it's like saying a Winchester. Okay? It's like saying a Remington. It's like saying a Lee Enfield. It is a manufacturer. In fact, Lee Enfield would be more specific than a Mauser. It is one of the most popular actions. In fact, there are many Mauser actions that aren't even made by Mauser. And again, plenty of mil-circ in it. And hey, Bubba-ized is what Crackpot Broccoli said. I wouldn't even say it's definitely Bubba-ized. This could just be a sporting rifle that somebody dropped into a black nylon stock. People said, oh, it'll be impossible to trace because it's no. It may or may not be hard to trace. We'll see. But in the end, no, it was a handgun. No, it was this. No, it was that. It was a super rifle or whatever. The second I saw the footage, I turned to my wife and I said, I've hunted my whole life. I hate to say it, but that man's dead. There's no way he's coming back from that. And that was a closed breech rifle, probably something 30 caliber. I couldn't possibly know exactly. It's not that distinctive. But the sound was a closed breech, which means that when you shoot, you do not get an ejection. Okay? Is this the right rifle? Is there some kind of shenanigans? I don't know. But it sure looks like it is, and it certainly tracks with that. There is, and anybody that tells you there is no difference between the way a closed breech or semi-auto rifle shot sounds when fired in the same caliber cartridge is wrong. Anybody who spent any amount of time shooting knows there is a difference in the crack of something when that breech never opens. You never have an ejection. You never have any venting. And all of the sound, therefore, is projected out the front of the rifle. It's a different sound. And so this probably is the rifle that killed Charlie Kirk. And then lastly, is this the suspect, right? They arrested like some clown that had his pants dropped down around his ankles and was blathering crazy shit. Do you know what happens at college campuses all the time? That everybody's convinced like guys were giving hand signals to the shooter. Why? No one understands why. There was a guy behind him and he was making gang signs or something. Like if I thought somebody was about to get shot in the freaking head and I'm standing directly behind him, I'm not there making hand signs. I'm getting the f- out. I don't trust my guy that much. This is not an operative likely. If Joe Blow's giving hand signs, it's not an operative. The truth is, I'm going to go more into this when we have more information because I'm going to actually be like, oh, I don't know, a responsible effing journalist instead of like all you clowns out there, including clowns in the scumbag that is the media. Stop talking about shit you don't know before you know something, please, because here's where it gets serious. Bad shit's coming. Bad shit and probably bad shit from the right if more bad shit from the left doesn't happen first. I'm going to tell you that they might not have the right guy. The guy who did it might get away. He might go shoot somebody else because apparently he's pretty decent at it. It's a pro hit. No, you know what it is, though? It is a well thought out, well designed hit. You do not have to be an expert to hit somebody at that range. I could do it drunk with iron sights offhand. Okay? Not completely trash drunken, but four shots of whiskey in, I can hit a man standing offhand from 140 yards with iron sights. I promise you I can. Okay? So stop that, but look at where this is likely to go. To understand this, you have to understand a couple dynamics here. Number one, the violence of the right. Somebody said today, because some asshole drove through a vigil, I don't remember where it was now, drove through a vigil for Charlie Kirk, like tried to run people over. They pulled him out of his vehicle and he beat his ass. I'm not sanctioning it, but I do understand why it happened. And somebody said in the comments, oh, sure, but the right is never violent. I responded to that person. I said, no one ever said never, Scooter. No one ever said never. We're just less prone to it. What the right is when it comes to violence, very good at it and very capable and very well armed. The difference is, it was Idaho. Yep, he's correct. It was Idaho. It was Idaho. It was Idaho. He can't prove it, Idaho, Puma. Whatever. He can't prove it. The guy was giving signs. Hey, shut up. Just shut. Get out of my... Who is this idiot? Bert Mantu, get out. Just leave. You're not welcome here because you're not open to reality. You're just talking stupid shit. You're the kind of person I'm talking about. Anyway, the right has people that are predisposed to be violent. Some of them, you know, had certain jobs that were designed to be violent. They were trained in violence, and they're not quite whole people. And it takes something like this for them, though, to actually become what they are, like to fully realize that potential. And I'm not advocating anything, but I'm going to give you a look inside the mind of people like this because I'm a little bit kind of one of them. I, too, was trained in violence quite a bit. And the right is concerned with justice in their head, not necessarily in reality. In other words, when the left is angry, let's burn down a Target and steal TV sets. That'll show the system, right? Let's burn down the minority businesses to protect and defend and stand up for the minorities. They just act with random violence. They'll attack anybody. In this case, they did specifically target somebody. But in general, the left just burns shit to the ground. And they never get the people who are actually the people that they claim are the enemy. They end up hurting their own. Democrats burn down Democratic cities. You know what I'm talking about. Democrats raid and destroy and loot stores in the name of wokeness that are woke like Target with Tuckums. Okay? The right is a lot more plotting, patient, and thoughtful. And we have something going on right now that is very dangerous on top of this. You got people all over the place running their mouth saying terrible things about Charlie Kirk. And a lot of them are not on anonymous accounts. They're real names there. Finding where they live is easy. I'm calling it a shopping list. Right now, there are probably people out there very incensed by this, making a shopping list. And when you come out and you run your mouth this way and you speak horribly of a man who was just assassinated for speaking, and that's it, and he is now widowed with two children gone, and this man's younger than my son, seeing somebody shot like this with a birth date of 1993 is hard for me. Some of those people might be like, you know, I've been holding back, but I'm not going to do it anymore. And look at you volunteering to go to the top of the list. If you don't think that shit happens, pay attention, man. Serial killers, mass murders are a thing and are usually triggered by something. Doesn't make it justifiable. But once that shit starts, it doesn't stop. And it starts going two ways. I told you guys in 2020, get out, get out, get out, talking about the Flashpoint cities. I'm telling you again, when I told you back then, even though I went out of my way to explain it, and there's a link in today's notes to an episode I did in 2020, where I'm abundantly clear about why. It's not because the city's going to burn down. I said that a narrow window of opportunity to get out was closing. The people that had a place to go or already were buying a place or whatever weren't going to give it up, and you weren't going to be able to afford to get out. Tell me that didn't happen. Tell me exactly, in spite of the fact that it was twisted because you didn't want to hear it, it's very difficult now to find that little place out in the country. Even just, you can still work in town, but it's very expensive, isn't it? I told you it was coming. Now I'm telling you the violent part, about 75% is my odds, which 25% it won't. But I think 75% we're going to go into a full scale eruption of violence. And how far it goes, I don't know. I don't know. Because AK Glock guy is right. They are straight up celebrating it, not trying to hide it. And the media is dogpiling on. Do not underestimate the previous impact of that young girl being killed and the media making it out that you were racist to notice the color of the person who did it. To notice facts is now racist. And this shit with Charlie Kirk, and people are having a hard time grokking this. You don't understand. Like, the trans component to this is huge. And that's why I believe that maybe the FBI is being honest when they tell you there were trans messages inscribed on the bullets. It's very possible. Probably the casings, not the rounds themselves. Probably. Right? I was just in Seattle. There are people, this is the only thing that matters to them, is trans this, trans that, and a lot of them aren't even trans. They are so ginned up about this. And there's a bigger thing in this with the whole left, a dynamic that no one's discussed. And I want to drop it on you so you can start to understand how twisted a society we live in today. If you're 40 or older, and definitely 50 or older, you grew up in a different world. And I'm not talking about the trans testicles and all that shit, okay? What I mean is, if you go back to people that grew up in the 70s, 80s, and early 90s, there's some dynamic differences in family life. The divorce rate was lower. Families tended to stay together at least longer. Like, I had a lot of friends that had divorced parents, but the parents got divorced when they were like in their teens, not before they even knew their so they're used to having a family unit. Grandparents tended to be more part of the family, and people tended to have things like dogs and live on farms or in the country where they were in touch with life. And when you're in touch with life, you sooner or later become in touch with something else. Death. There's a lot of people today have never actually experienced death in a meaningful way in their life, especially that are 20 something. Grandparents live longer and they're less connected. So even if grandpa died, if you only saw him three or four times in your life, well, you know, I didn't really know him. Sure, he was family, but I didn't really know him. If you were born and at the foot of your crib was a young pup who you grew up with, and I'm not equating the life of a dog to a person, but it is an understanding of loss. And when you were 12 or 13 years old, you had to take the dog that you loved with all your heart to the vet and have it put down. You lost permanently. Most people, by the time they were college age, 20, 30, 40 years ago, had experienced a loss like that in their life where they actually knew what death was. I'm not saying that nobody does anymore by that age. I'm saying a large portion of that group of mentally ill by design people that are in the college age demographic haven't. Death is not real to them. Death is not permanent to them. It's a solution to their problem, and now they'll be happy like all the other fake solutions. And they're all on these freaking SSRIs and antidepressant drugs, and they're being told that they're normal when they are actually mentally ill. You can only get one thing from that, and that is a violent generation that we have, and the one that will sanction violence. And the more they talk about it, like they're happy about it, the more rage they will gin up on the right side of this issue. And I'm talking about directional, not correct, because what's coming is not going to be correct. I don't want this to happen. I want the 25% chance. And I honestly think that because I want it, I'm making that number bigger than it is. I don't want to be right. I want to come back in a few weeks and go, okay, everything's settling down. I was wrong. I just don't think I'm going to be able to do so. But once it starts, I don't know. I think all bets are off. So what can you do? Because I'm going to dig into the facts of this when we have some facts, probably Monday. But this is a harsh reality. You have to expect the worst now for you and your family and for your safety. So, number one, always carry, but let's be honest about the limitations of that. I heard so many people, man, if I was on that train where that girl got stabbed and I was carrying, you might have shot the guy, but he would have already stabbed her before you did. Unless you were sitting right behind him and actually was looking at his hand, most likely that happened too quick. And you would have been like the guy in the church a few years ago in Texas, just down the road from me. Yes, he stopped the attacker, but only after the attacker killed two parishioners in the church. So, yes, carry. Yes, be situational aware. But if you stand on that and, oh, kick anybody's ass, you are actually more at risk because you are more likely to dial down the situational awareness, which is way more important than the gun itself or whatever other means of defense you have. Next, avoid flashpoints and danger areas. If you don't have to be in a place where this shit goes crazy, please just don't go there right now. It's the best course of action. Think about a long-term get-out plan. As hard as it is now, I told you 5 years ago, and I'm telling you now, 5 years from now, it will be even harder. People like me who have already ejected ourselves, who have already, I'm not selling. I have a 2.95% interest rate. I have 3 acres. I live in an unincorporated area. I have a 2,500 square foot house that I probably pay less for than your rent for your 2-bedroom apartment in most places. I'm not going anywhere, and I'm not apologizing for it, and I feel bad for you, but I did tell you. You need to think strategically about a long-term get out, because this is only going to get worse. We were at the death throw end of an empire, as I've told you for 10 years. And I told you that, too. Whether you want to admit it or not, I bat about 85, 90% in my predictions. I wish I didn't, because a lot of them were bad. I don't claim to know what's going to happen. I'm just telling you what might. And I'll put it this way. I've said it's like 75 to 80%. This goes really kinetic now. 20 to 25% it doesn't. But if you get yourself out of the danger zones, your life gets better anyway. So imagine I told you there's a surgery you can have. And there's a 25% chance if you don't have the surgery, you'll be okay. But there's a 75% if you don't have a surgery, you're going to die. And there's a less than a half a percent chance that you'll die if you have the surgery, right? Like from the surgery. The surgery is very low risk. The upside potential is very high. And it's an inexpensive surgery. You would probably do the surgery. That's what I'm saying here. Because if not this, this shit's not going to quit. It is coming. You can feel, and I'm telling you, Tuesday, I had already planned this segment before anything happened with Charlie Kirk. And I'm telling you, I have gotten really good at paying attention to the tension level in society. And it is at an all-time high, and it is not at an all-time high on the left so much as the right. If you feel an underlying rage right now, understand people out there feel more of it than you do. How many times do you have to multiply it before you do something? Somebody already has multiplied it. The man literally let anybody speak, let anybody be heard. He was exactly what the left claims they want, open to discussion and hearing the other side. But you have to understand something. When somebody says a man is not a woman and a man cannot be a woman, there's a huge segment of society right now, you're Hitler. They think you're evil. It's not a difference of opinion. And there's 10 other things like that that are just that ridiculous. And when you feel, I can't even speak and be safe. My child cannot speak and be safe. There's a violent fucking nature to all men. And the men that just want to be left alone, and even the people I'm talking about predisposed to this, mostly what the people on the right, and I would say libertarians and anarchists, et cetera, mostly what we want, leave me alone. Once you know, you will not be left alone no matter what. There is a place where it breaks. And when those types of men especially break, they don't go postal. They don't go Michael Douglas falling down. They're very calculating as to what they do. But they also know it's a one-way street, and they become very effing dangerous. And when that starts, the reason, well, why don't we just clean house? Because that won't be what happens. This will enable the government to become more totalitarian than you can imagine in all of your prepper porn novels. That's the real risk. Above all, think, don't panic, and be rational. Be patient. Get out of the way. But know that others will not. It's going to get bad. That's all I have for you today in this segment. It went longer than I planned. If you're new to me and my work, talk to some people who aren't. I don't issue warnings like this frequently. I know he's the survival guy. Yeah. How many of these have there been in 17 years? I bet a handful. One hand, you could count them all. And how many of them are wrong? As far as I know, none. I hope this is one of them. Don't bet on it. I'll catch you next week and we'll do an end-to-end analysis of what we know at that point, because right now we don't know anything just yet. Please be patient and stop talking about things like you know things that you cannot know. Stop listening to people say things on social media and accepting them as fact. Most of these people are idiots, and they wouldn't know which end of a rifle to point at a target if their life depended on it. Don't take their word for it. As I've shown you, a lot of things that everybody's claiming have already been disproven. Okay, well, that does round things out. And if I was a little over the top in that one, it's only because I care. It's only because I care. And I'm telling you, all of the conspiracy theory stuff, all of the rage baiting, all of the fake images, all of the Photoshop shit, all of the actual nonsense out of the media, all of the real stuff out of the media, all of the people goading it on both sides are a big part of why it's going to be a problem. Please be aware. Don't change your life, but change the way you live your life a little bit to be a little bit more aware, because we're always at risk. But now the risk is undeniable. With that, hey, I still want to tell you, we got a lot to be excited about. We got the AI course coming up. 100 people got into that. It's going to be a great second round, class 002. We'll do it again with class 3. And we're building an army of entrepreneurs and the alumni out of those group. Especially by the time we get to like our third, that'll be 300 people that have gone through this training that can work together. That's going to be amazing, because opportunity won't go away because bad times come. In fact, a lot of times bad times create opportunities. And then we got the fall workshop coming. Again, be ready. Get up in the morning. Set an alarm. Set two alarms. Have your best friend call you. I don't know. Make sure you're there if you want to come. We're going to sell out 9 a.m. We'll be dropping the links in the Telegram group and channel. I'll probably send out a standalone email to remind you one more time. But that's it. You guys know how it works. We've been doing it now since 2013. We've sold out, again, almost everyone we've ever done. And in the last 5 years, we've sold out everything in under 6 minutes. So I don't know why it would be much different this year. With that, I wish you well. I wish you a great weekend. And again, Monday, assuming we actually know more, I'll come back and we'll cover this in a way with a little less Jack anger, and hopefully Jack saying maybe it won't be as bad as I think. With that, have a great weekend. Take care, guys. Just run you round. They said you should have a house the American way. Dollar down, a dollar a month, and you never have to pay. There's a bed.